Welcome to the Realtors Land Institute podcast, the voice of land, the industry's leading land real estate organization.
Hello, this is Justin Osborne, accredited land consultant with the Wells Group in Durango, Colorado. Welcome to the second episode of Dirt Debacle, a new series on the Voices of Land podcast. Today, we're going to get into the dirt with two RLI members who are accredited land consultants and both currently serve on RLI's executive leadership team. And that's not all they have in common. Their kids recently married, and they now share a beautiful granddaughter. That's right, folks. Today, we're going to hear wild stories of selling land from Jeff Hurdle and Dan Murphy. Jeff Hurdle joins us from Chattanooga, Tennessee. Jeff has been an active broker since 1992 in South Carolina, Georgia, and Tennessee. He maintains brokerage and development firms in Monroe, Georgia, and Chattanooga, Tennessee. Dan Murphy is founder of M4 Ranch Group, past president of the Colorado chapter of RLI, and numerous other boards and organizations in the industry. He and his team serve the Mountain West, selling and listing some of the most spectacular ranches. Dan and his family have been a successful part of RLI and the ranch brokerage. Dan has been fortunate to not only sell great ranches, but to live the ranch life in the Mountain West. Welcome to the podcast, Jeff and Dan.
Thank you for having me on here.
We sure appreciate an opportunity to get a chance to visit with you and work with RLI.
Yeah, man, this will be fun. Like, knowing you two guys personally, I know you're movers and shakers, and so I appreciate you taking time to record this today. I'm looking forward to kind of see where this goes. I mean, between the two of you, Jeff, how long have you been in the business?
This would be my 32nd year.
Wow. Okay. And Dan?
You know, it's honestly, to get where we are right now, it's my entire life. So from start to finish, the fact of having a license and being in the business is very different than growing up and learning the business. So it's been more years than I'd like to admit out loud.
So we've got numerous decades here of experience, and I know you guys have some good stories. Man, this is not the fun, easy industry that sometimes social media and HGTV makes it look like, that we get to deal with all these smooth transactions without any hurdles. And so today, I want to spend a little bit of time just kind of talking about the hurdles that you guys have seen in the industry. And so, Dan, let's start with you. I mean, what's kind of the most recent crazy story that you've had to deal with on getting buyers and sellers to the finish line?
You know, there's a lot of those, and you know as well as I do, Justin, you're in this. We're definitely not box on box brokers, and you think about what we deal with on a daily basis, and it's absolutely kind of staggering. The one that was really cool that we recently did was a transaction on a large remote ranch that had a 3,300 square foot lodge built on a mountaintop, sitting at about 11,000 feet. That we had the Catholic diocese come in and buy. And in that process, you know, it was kind of interesting working with the Catholic diocese and having, you know, 40 monks show up in robes and Birkenstocks, touring the ranch in snowstorms and climbing over peaks and going around, and those guys never missed a beat. You know, that was probably one of the coolest ones I've had in a long time. Tremendous group of young men, all the monks. Getting through that process on a remote property with guys that are not businessmen in an industry that is all based on faith for them and all based on logistics for us. One of our hardest obstacles that we faced on that particular closing was insuring that remote cabin. You know, you're talking about seasonal access, snowcat only in the winter months, four-wheel drive in the summer months, no fire protection, middle of a alpine forest, you know, an hour away from the nearest fire truck kind of thing. And so at the end of the day, we ended up really fighting through several insurance companies trying to make that work. And at the end of the day, we ended up insuring it through Lloyd's of London. And then my gut is they'll pull the insurance off of it from the Catholic diocese once they get all the monastery built how they want it, up there and the individual little cabins, they'll pull the insurance completely. But that's something we face on a daily basis, not selling to the Catholic diocese, but we do face very unique things in this industry, things like that, where we're trying to find coverage for these remote properties on the top of the world that are seasonal access. And there's not been many of those companies left in the world when it comes to insuring places like that with the recent forest fires that we've had throughout the Mountain West. So that there's a lot more to that story, but that was kind of a neat one.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't know what you're seeing out there, Dan, but Jeff, but yeah, where Dan and I are, it's just crazy the amount of policies that are not getting renewed, entities that are totally pulling out of our state out here in Colorado. Are you having anything similar happening out there where you're at, Jeff, in Tennessee?
I couldn't answer that fully for the market. I don't. I'm a transitional land guy. So a little bit of building work that I've done, I've never had a problem with insurance. We've had, you know, the Gatlinburg fires ring true out here in East Tennessee that came through a few years ago. And they might have some issues in that particular area, but we haven't experienced anything like Dan's talking about. Of course, we also don't have anything located like Dan's talking about either.
Yeah, that's true, man. I mean, I know you definitely sell some wooded properties out there, but you know, we've got, golly, such just extremely remote properties that you can't get to, you know, 4 months out of the year, maybe 5 months out of the year in a heavy snowstorm.
Yeah, that's not the issue here, not the weather anyway.
Well, what are some of the issues you have out there? I mean, I heard there was a rezoning issue that you kind of dealt with, wasn't there?
Oh, that's my life. Rezoning is a transitional land guy's life. That's all we do. If that's kind of the definition. If a land is transitioning, it means it's being rezoned. And I've gone through many. I got one in particular I was thinking about. It took 3 years to get the rezoning approved. For the closing, well, the rezoning and the plan approval. It happened right at COVID. So that was, they were canceling meetings left and right before they learned how to do Zoom calls like we're on today. It had a special overlay that the city had put on it, or the county had put on it, that we had to pull out of, then it had to be annexed into the city. That of course then had to be rezoned to a city zoning. Half of it was in wetlands. It only had 48 foot of frontage, and it wanted to be a townhome development. So that was quite a chore. Also needed an easement from the Board of Education to get in. And so that took 3 years. It was meetings. It was going to city council members one by one. Of course, city council meetings, planning and zoning members, the mayor's office. Transitioning on a reason like that could take, well, never has taken that long in my 32 years, but that one's a record and I hope I'll never break it.
Man. Yeah. That's 3 years. That's a long time. I mean, that's not unheard of in some parts of the West to go through that long, but where you're at, I mean, that's normally what, a 6 month process at the most?
At the most. It's in the busier areas like Nashville proper, Atlanta proper, even not quite Chattanooga, it could take 18 months. But that's if you're dragging your feet. Now when I say 18 months, that's the rezone and getting plan approval for your development. Around here, the developers, they don't want to close the deal until they have the rezoning and their plan approved. And that means going to an engineer, having a full set of drawings, road profiles, waterline profiles, sewer profiles, all completed and approved by the municipality. And then we go to closing. And it's, there's also that line, you got to sell that to your sellers too, because they're ready to close the day they get the contract, and you have to educate them that this is going to take you a minute. But I would have never dreamed 3 years.
Yeah, a lot of those sellers start losing patience after 90 days. So try to keep on that long, man. I can imagine. Dan, what other crazy stories do you have for us, man? Selling the real big acreages, big ranches that you deal with out here in the West.
You know, we have a tendency of changing the way we do business when we learn hard lessons. One of the hardest lessons that I got early in the business was one of the funnest we had a group of guys call us about buying a private ski area in Saratoga, Wyoming. And so they brought the jet in, and, you know, we had, you know, gotten a Suburban, and we drove up to this, you know, couple $100,000 snowcat that we leased for the day and planned this whole thing out to be at the summit, at the peaks at 11,000, 10,600 feet, whatever it was, right at sunset. So off we went, and these guys got out of a jet, got into a Suburban, got into a heated snowcat, all dressed in city clothes. And up we went to the top of the mountain. And so beautiful day, you know, 8 feet of fresh snow on the ground. I mean, it was just the epitome of what you dream of for a skier. And went up to the top of the mountain and sat up there and watched the sunset. And we turned and stuck a pine tree straight through the bottom of that snowcat and blew all the hydraulic lines. So here we are on the top of this mountain. We're 5 miles maybe up from the bottom, and 8 feet of snow, 2 foot deep snow tracks. And, you know, looks like somebody had a killing field with red hydraulic fluid all over everything. And those guys are dressed in city clothes, the sun's setting, and it's probably 20 degrees. And I'm like, this is not good. No sat phone, no backup riders, no snowmobiles, no safety net, no, you know, no sat phone. And so off I went post-holing 5 miles out of the mountains to get back, to get help, to get these guys off the mountain. And as I got to the trailhead, 100 yards from the trailhead, here come the search and rescue. His wife had called, and here come the snowmobiles. And the lesson in that was, don't ever go when it's not treated like scuba diving, or you've got partners that are out there with capabilities, and don't ever go when you don't have the capability to reach someone by sat phone, or now you've got several different tools to use, as in Spot. But being that remote and that high country, you know, keep in mind that those machines are awesome. They're a great way to get the farthest distance from your truck. And so this is pretty much, you know, I learned the hard way that those things are absolutely staggering and getting you to see great things and be on top of a mountain. But boy, if one breaks down and you're not prepared, you put not only yourself, but everybody with you in danger. And so we do things a little differently now, when we helicopters to airplanes, to boats, to snowcats, to snowmobiles, to rangers. We do a lot of things in teams.
Yeah, that's a great lesson, man. I mean, I tell you, it's kind of learning the hard way. But we got stuck on a ranch. This was, I don't know, probably 12, 14 years ago. And it was September, and it was leased to an outfitter. And so you guys know where this story's going, I'm sure. But, you know, it was it was my listing. So called the outfitter, you know, left him a voicemail, said, hey, we're going to be showing the property, going to make sure I show up between the hours of 12 and 2 so that we're not disturbing anything. I mean, I'm an outdoorsman. I know what it's like. You don't want to be out there sun up, sun down, and somebody, you know, be looking at a 300 plus bull and then have some idiot in a truck ruin the showing for you. So, you know, we go out there, and it was right during those hours, and I'm showing the ranch. We're coming out, like wrapping up the showing, 2 o'clock. I get to the gate. He had changed the lock and locked us in on the ranch, just like you're saying, out in the middle of nowhere, no service. This was an in-holding, Forest Service in-holding. So we're up, you know, gravel Forest Service road, about 30 miles, middle of nowhere. But thankfully, I've got the huge giant bolt cutters in the back of the truck, man. Right. So that was well prepared. So you guys that are listening, man, you city slicker realtors that are turning ranch brokers, make sure you get the redneck lock breakers there in your pickup truck, so you can get out of a ranch if you get stuck.
I wasn't in a ranch, but I do have my master key in the back of my truck. I've been in places where I've had to do that myself, but I was in the city.
In the city. This,
yeah. But make sure you carry an extra lock too, so then you can put the excuse that, oh, I was just putting my lock on it. After you cut your way in, you go, oh yeah, no, I was just making sure that we didn't have any confusion down the road. I just want to make sure we had a brokerage lock on there. And so anyway, it's always a great way to eat crow and not be embarrassed by it.
I love it. Yeah. That's something we should do on another episode is go through the inventory of items we carry in our pickup trucks when we're going on a showing or going on a listing appointment. Cause that'd be another 30-minute podcast in itself, I think.
Oh, that is the amazing thing and the difference of what this industry is faced with right now, where, I mean, I don't know about you, but the other day I showed one of our clients wanted to buy a house, a family member wanted to buy a house in one of the local towns we work in. And I think we showed 7 or 9 different houses, and I never met a broker. There was a lockbox with a super key, and you went in and showed it. And I'm thinking to myself, how, you know, as our policy as a company, we are on property, period. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, none of these guys are here to represent their listing. And we wonder why we're facing what we're facing in this industry when it comes to box on box. And it doesn't take much to realize that not very many people really do their job anymore.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, it's so easy now to separate yourself from the competition because of that very thing, Dan. I mean, whether it's being present for, a showing or whether it goes into marketing. I mean, I can't tell you how many sellers I talk to that, you know, we go in after the previous agent was there and, you know, usually we're the second or third realtor that's kind of, you know, having that come to Jesus meeting with the seller on what the property's really worth and what it takes to sell it. And they say, well, yeah, the other realtor, they put it in the MLS and they put a sign on the gate. And I think that's all they did. Yeah. And that's why the property didn't sell. We're going to come in here with drones and interactive maps and make videos and be present for showings. And, you know, property's not on the market 90 days and then it sells.
You know, Justin, that's the single biggest positive to me with RLI. And I think that, you know, recently we were in one of these executive meetings, Jeff and I were in Chicago, and one of the comments from the past president of NAR was RLI and RLI's thought process might be the only thing that saves the industry. And I thought to myself, you know, that's a remarkable statement, but there's so much to that. And what he based that on was the commitment of an RLI broker compared to the commitment of an average broker. And I mean that by education and commitment and the commitment to have better knowledge about their property, to be actively involved, to be at a different level, you know, than what you see somebody that just gets their license and goes out and works on averages. And, you know, if you look at that in a big scale, that's one of the things that just truly separates RLI. I mean, we talk about these funny stories and we talk about all these adventures that we get to have in the industry, which are literally unbelievable. That being said, when it comes down to it, you know, we're fully committed in what we're doing. And that commitment means being there for both the buyer and the seller at a different level.
Yeah, 100%. Jeff, you got anything else here? Other stories you've got from Tennessee, Georgia, you can share with the listeners?
We had a catastrophe, not quite on like Dan's. I didn't strand anybody on the mountaintop for hours, but I did in their cars. This was a rezone. It was zoned ag. This had been a number of years ago, but we rezoned at the office and built an office for someone. And during the grading, you know, you're supposed to call for utility locate, and we did. And they snapped a gas line. And it was a pretty good gas line. And so it shut down a state highway for 5 hours while they had to get them out there and get it repaired. And only to have, while they were fixing the gas line, they yanked out and ripped out of the ground one of Southern Bell's telephone trunk lines that led down to the county below us. And so they had phones shut off for quite a while down there while they repaired that. So what happened was the utility company had mismarked the line. So that's why it got hit. It wasn't our fault. But nonetheless, we're the guys standing there with the equipment on the side of the road, waving to people, going, sorry. Yeah, and they not only did they shut it down, but they had to evacuate homes all around the area. It was quite an ordeal, to say the least. Man.
Now tell me you didn't have like a Jeff Hurdle Land Brokerage sticker on the equipment or on the side.
No. I was just I was there, but I did not have it advertised quite that way. No.
So you were there present actually when it happened.
I was present when it happened. I was on site for my buyers. Just happened to be, you know, grading's fun. The fun part of in transitional land where you're putting a road in or just clearing out a building lot. I love the part of moving the dirt.
So you had a you had a captivated audience with all those people stopped on the highway. I mean, did you take advantage of that in some way, Jeff? Were you handing out business cards or something?
I didn't want to speak to anybody, and I didn't want them speaking to me. As far as they were concerned, it was my fault. And at that point, as far as I'm concerned, it was probably part of my fault, but it wasn't. They were about 8 feet off on the locate, and I don't know how they managed to do that. But they're given, I don't know, I think it's like 2 foot in either direction. And they were way off. So we went unscathed from a liability part, but utility company wasn't. I'm not sure what happened, but I'm sure they caught wind from the county and from Southern Bell.
Man, yeah, 8 feet. That's a huge discrepancy.
Mm-hmm. It sure was.
Man. Well, either one of you guys have anything else here you want to share with the listeners as we're kind of wrapping up, getting towards the tail end of the podcast?
No, Justin, just thanks. Thanks for, you know, taking the time out of your schedule to do these for the industry. And it's a huge help. And, you know, it's an honor to be a part.
I agree. I'm the same thing. Thank you both. Thanks, RLI. Thank you, Dan, for joining in. It's always good to see my fellow family members on the screen and hearing their voice. So y'all have a great day.
Listeners, I hope Dirt Debacles continues to dig up issues and solutions that help you avoid some of the same wild things happening to your land deals. If you're a current RLI member and you have some crazy stories you'd like to share with us, get in touch and we'll consider having you on the podcast. You just need to go to rliland.com and contact the marketing manager on the staff contact page. And for more expertise on land real estate topics, be sure to check out the RLI blog, follow us on social media, and of course, tune in for upcoming episodes of the Voices of Land podcast.